You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. That was a nice break there with Cactus Music's Quinn Bishop. Some memorable stuff has gone on in that store. That is a great place to support if you are into vinyl. We've had some great interviews tonight. We're going to keep taking it up a big level here because right now we got a guy that's a big part of Major League Soccer since 1996. MLSsoccer.com just did an article featuring originals. Joe Tatino is the play-by-play man for the LA Galaxy. Great guy. Have known him all these years since 96, and we welcome him to the show right now. Joe, thank you so much for coming on.
Ah, Glenn, my pleasure. How you guys doing?
I think we're doing okay down here in Houston, and I guess that's going to be my first question to you is, how have you been handling sort of the whole change with COVID-19 and the issues of isolation and staying quarantined?
I think we're all coping the best as possible. We're a little stir crazy. I have an elderly mom that I pay attention to on a daily basis, and so there's a lot of sunny dudes going on right now, but it's okay. You know, we got her in a bubble at home at her house, and she's safe, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, so you're basically really limiting any outside contact with your mother, I would assume.
Absolutely. No stores, no nothing like that. If anything, it's in-car travel just to get her out of the house and keep her from being stir crazy. But that's about it.
Yeah. I got 90-year-old plus parents and only two caretakers allowed in and out of the house. So you know the routine. But we're here to talk about you. So I want to talk about you. You know, this is a remarkable lens that you have looked at the Los Angeles Galaxy and Major League Soccer through. I just want to kind of get into initially, when did the call of the game become important to you?
Oh, gosh. For me, it was really out of high school. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, and coming from an immigrant family, you work, you do something after high school. And for me, it just kind of, you know, there was a pressure building up. I was the youngest of three boys. They're doing something. My brothers are doing something. I had to figure it out. Soccer wasn't going to be an opportunity for me to play. And so I went the journalism route. And then I wasn't getting the answers I wanted in terms of going print, and decided, you know what, I'm just going to be a sportscaster. And I went down that route. And you know, picked up an internship with the old San Diego Soccers. They were indoors at that point. And they allowed me to do play-by-play into a tape deck, provided I would do what interns do. And that was, you know, hauling TVs up to the top of the arena, the big old 19-inch TVs. And back in the day, 1989, 1988, they were pretty heavy. But I would do that, and they allowed me to do some games, and I did a ton of games. And it was all about repetition, and I... You know, eventually, because we still had no outdoor league, I was doing play-by-play for the Continental Indoor Soccer League. And the team was the Anaheim Splash, and that was my first, you know, paid job to do, and it was fun.
You know what? So was I in the CISL calling
games.
That's where I got my start. Absolutely. So you and I crossed paths even deeper than we know back then. So you get this passionate call of the game, but there's also a part of your career where you worked with Jim Rome and you were in the production side of it as well. I mean, so you have a really deep background when it comes to experiences.
I was in the right place at the right time. The station that hired me at the time, 690 out of San Diego, it was an all-news talk station. I was the morning news producer and always slanted towards sports. They were the flagship of the San Diego Chargers, and so I had a little in. And October of 1990, we flipped the station to all sports radio, and it was arguably the second one in the country to do that. WFAN in New York was the first, of course, and then you know, you might be a fan of WIP out of Philadelphia. They may say they were the first, the second or so, but we were right there. And I was, you know, in the right place at the right time, 20 years old, being able to be part of a sports station and being, you know, at the beginning of this format, which, of course, we all made a bunch of mistakes, but we figured it out along the way. And they teamed me with Jim as his producer, his board op, for the sake of using a word that maybe listeners might not know. But I was producing the show, running the commercials and everything else, and had an opportunity to be on the air doing sports updates at that point. And Jim and I were on the air for 5 hours a night. 7 to midnight originally was the show. And Jim became successful. I was part of that success, luckily. And we were together for 5 years, and we took it to a national show, and we created something called the Noble Sports Radio Network. And we had a gentleman by the name of Brian Purdy, who has worked in Houston. I don't know if he still lives there or not, but he was peddling our show nationally. And that's how we built the Jim Rome Network.
Incredible. Talking to Joe Dottino, longtime play-by-play man for the LA Galaxy. He has seen it all. Just a great ambassador for the game, the league, the Galaxy in general. For you as a broadcaster, what's most important when you go into a game? What is your job on game day? I mean, we know the nuts and bolts of it, but how do you want to come across on a broadcast?
I think I try to always keep in the back of my mind of not getting my opinions in the way of what's going on. Certainly, I think I'm somewhat opinionated on the call, and I'll say if it's a bad play or a bad defensive move or a bad pass or whatever it is, but I always try to balance if that same player does something good to recognize that as well. But I try to, I tell the young guys, let it breathe. It's a bottle of wine. Pop the cork, let it breathe a little bit, especially on television. Radio-wise, of course, you have to be more descriptive. But that's what I try to do. I don't try to be anything other than who I am, because I cannot be somebody else, and that would be a bad move. And so I try to be as natural as possible, and I try to let the emotions part of a goal and so forth to be as natural as it can be.
Now, you've worked with a lot of great analysts and great guys, Rick Davis, Kobe Jones, a couple that I've worked with as well, not as often as you, but Rick and I used to do some Serie A, and then Kobe and I have done some World Cup. So, give me a good Rick story and Kobe, because it is a team at the end of the day. You and I know that very distinctively. It's how two people work together. It's how they present themselves as an enhancement to the game. So talk about Rick and Kobe.
So it's interesting because this Rick obviously played in the old NESL, and a lot of his career was in the MISL indoors when the league went away, unfortunately. But in his case, he was also on television. So he had a couple of World Cups under his belt, if I remember, at least one World Cup under his belt for NBC. So he had broadcast experience when I came on board with him. And he initially was my co-host with what we started, which was Galaxy Talk. That was the original English spoken word for the LA Galaxy on my station, 1997, 1998, until we finally integrated English broadcast in 1999, TV and radio on a full-time basis. And so for Rick, he was kind of my surrogate. Even though I had this burning desire to be a play-by-play man outdoor when the league returned and I had indoor experience, he was kind of the guy that said, hey, this guy can do it. Give him a chance. And for him, I owe a tremendous amount of allegiance to him, not for that, and the fact that he's an incredible person. And in terms of Rick, I think, on a broadcast, Rick is the epitome of seeing both sides of the story. He always was that way. So if it was a great play for the opponent, he would make sure he talked about that and so forth. He always stayed down the middle, and I learned that from Rick. Kobe's a different story for me, because Kobe, I announced pretty much every game he played for the LA Galaxy. And for him, you see him differently as a player, and then he's next to you in the broadcast booth. And he, to me, comes across as a guy that when you first retire as a player, it takes a little time to be able to really say what's going on, because your colleagues are still out there, right?
Yeah.
But as that evolves along the way, you suddenly call a spade a spade. And Kobe's not afraid to do it, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I like that about Kobe also. I mean, you could make an argument, and no better person to ask than you. Is he the most definitive player in L.A. Galaxy history? I mean, even because of where he was in those early years and how important he was as the face of that franchise?
Yeah, I think if we're going to do MLS 1.0, 2.0, and so forth, and for the Galaxy down that road too, I think Kobe certainly was MLS face of the league 1.0, face of the LA Galaxy 1.0, and then it kind of transitioned on eventually as Kobe got a little older, and of course Landon Donovan came on board and into David Beckham, and things started to go skyward. But certainly, without a doubt, you know, as far as I'm concerned, when I think of the LA Galaxy and even the U.S. national team 94 and going forward, Kobe's right there. I think still today, if you ask somebody that may not be a soccer fan, do you know anything about American soccer? Do you own any players? I think Kobe Jones' name still comes to the forefront. Maybe not number one, but certainly 1, 2, 3, somebody will mention Kobe Jones' name.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you've seen so many greats: Kevin Hartman, Donovan, Beckham, Keane, Hermosillo, Cienfuegos. All right, so LAFC's come to town now. How good has it been for the rivalry? I mean, this has got to be another great phase in your career to be a part of El Tráfico.
See, I think it's great. I know that the and fans on both sides, they're going to fight it out. Hopefully not literally fight it out, but, you know, go after each other social media-wise and so forth. And in that regard, I believe it's great. And I think, listen, when you go to a Galaxy game on a Saturday night, and the other guys are playing at home, so I'll take it from there. The other guys are playing at home. You're talking about plus 40,000 fans watching professional soccer in Los Angeles. And that's a great number. I mean, it says a lot about where the sport is and the desire to go to a Galaxy game or the young guys game. And you know what? They're a good team. They had a great year last year. I understand what fans are talking about and media is talking about in terms of, hey, you want to be him, you want to be them, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I like the 5 rings that the Galaxy has.
Yeah. On the other hand, hasn't it been a great boost that LAFC has come in so big? And in some ways, you can argue fairly that they have lifted the bar in some areas.
Absolutely. I think what it does is it makes the Galaxy be better. The competition, you know, as far as they feed off each other to be better. I think LAFC has a thought process how to go about doing things. I think the LA Galaxy have had this thought process for quite some time, even going all the way back to when Alexi Lalas became the general manager of the club, and he was throwing the words around about, you know, MLS is super club and so forth.
Super club,
now,
yeah.
While the Galaxy don't necessarily say that anymore, I think they kind of carry that responsibility in mind when they're putting their club together. And that's why I've been fortunate enough to say David Beckham's name on a regular basis and Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Landon Donovan and even Chicharito, although we've only had 2 matches there, and Jonathan Dos Santos and Gio Dos Santos over the years and those guys. So we've been very fortunate. Those of us that cover the Galaxy and broadcast their games and even the fans to have those names around. But you can't win every year, as you know, Glenn. I mean, you've had great teams in Houston that have their own share of championships, and the names are a little bit different than what I've been used to having to broadcast. So it's about winning, and everybody goes about it a different way.
Joe, you're one of the best. You're also not only a very, very good commentator and an exceptional one that's had an exceptional career, but you're also a very, very good guy. And that's the other thing I like about you, Joe Tatino. So thank you very much for coming on tonight. Congratulations on that article and that honoring, because you're a guy that's contributed heavily to the sport in this country, and I thank you for that.
Well, hey, congratulations to you as well. I mean, your resume is very long, my friend, and you got World Cup broadcasts under your belt. Listen, if you're going to say congratulations to me, I need to tip my cap to you, and thank you very much for having me.
Joe, thanks for coming on the show tonight. We'll do it again real soon, okay?
I hope so. Thank you.
All right, that's Joe Tutino, LA Galaxy. Imagine what he's seen. Kobe Jones, Kevin Hartman, Donovan, Beckham, Keane, Hermosillo, Luis Hernandez. Remember all these guys? He's come through LA. Unbelievable. And now he's seen the LAFC, you know, coming in, creating the turf war in Los Angeles. Man, we've been catching up with a lot of the great commentators. Joe Tutino, Dave Johnson. We've had a number of different people on the show. Dwight Burgess, JP Della Camera. We're working our way through them, and that was one thing I wanted to do. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about COVID-19, how it's affecting the college game. We're going to visit with Texas A&M Aggie head coach, the great top 20-ranked program. He built it. G. Guerrieri coming up next.